I mean, the idea of Rahumaner in Hiroshi Sefer, and he was born in 1914 in Yerushalayim, and he went through his own enormous amount of experience, and he had healings, and then was sick again, etc. And he wrote an incredible amount as well, and a sparring, etc., etc. And Ezra Melech is one of the sparring that he quotes, even within this Yisrael B'Tachon. And what he did in Yisrael B'Tachon is he took different topics from the idea of just defining what B'Tachon is, and then he went on to, you know, the power of B'Tachon, Tefillah of B'Tachon, B'Tachon and Inshallah, B'Tachon and Refuah, or Briyut, all different topics, B'Tachon and Chanasa, and he went through, and at the end, he gives a Tefillah for B'Tachon, and he gives Sukkim on B'Tachon. And it says that just by saying Sukkim on B'Tachon, it brings a person to a higher level of B'Tachon. And at the end of his life, he went through, terrible Yisrael at the end of his life. And everyone says that his incredible trust in B'Tachon and Kodesh Baruch Hu, even at the end, you're not going to put it on me, even at the end, he had, he still had incredible B'Tachon and Kodesh Baruch Hu, and it gave him the strength in face of his suffering and everything he went through. Now, this little one here is the old one. It's all Hebrew. I don't know if anybody has. You can pick it up very easily, very anywhere. And then they have now English and Hebrew. It's translated. And so I thought maybe if we would just go through today, the introduction, because it's very powerful. It's interesting. There's a story at the end of the introduction that I read last night. That I read last night from Rev Arya Kaplan. Rev Arya Kaplan told this story also, and he knew the woman personally who the story was told about. Mm-hmm. So it's a current story. So anyway, there's the first introduction by the translator. His name is Colin Gross. And then there's the introduction after that of the of Rev Rahumaner. So I just thought maybe if you want, we can just read through a little bit. You know. Oh, I don't even have English.
I have.
Okay, do you want to start reading? Yeah. Okay. Page IX9. Is that IX9? 49.
Where was
it? It's Translator's Introduction. The translation is very nicely done. It's not exact word for word, but it's very nicely done. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay. I'm coughing about a gun.
Make this a table.
Trusting God is one of the least understood concepts in Judaism. To many, it means the certainty that all will be well and that everything will be fine. For the faithful, trust in God is a source of comfort. Yet for others, this very trust is a source of contempt. Trust in God is a complex issue and sometimes the subtleties of it can escape us. What does it really mean when we say, I trust in God? Many individuals find they are at a loss for the definition of both faith and trust. To the thinking person, trust refers to the awareness that all is in Hashem's hands. Our successes and our failures are only partially dependent on our own efforts. The man of faith lives his life with a vital part of our wish. Hashem, the silent partner, determines the final outcome of our endeavors. Any result is intimately connected to the game plan that Hashem receives.
So, what he's trying to put across to us is that the concept would be tough on it's very complex. Not a simple matter. And there are differences of opinion, actually, what it means to have bitachon on Hashem. Does it mean that everything will be okay? You just believe everything is okay? Does it mean that if everything's not okay, that's still okay? And there are many different things brought down. So it's not a simple philosophy. And but the idea of like looking through this, you get deeper and deeper in understanding what it is. But either way, the idea, it doesn't matter. Also, the idea of the tachon is that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is with you through the whole thing. Whether it feels good or doesn't feel good, whether the result comes out the way you want or not the way you want, whether you have the tachon that it will come out during the time you're going through the, some as we'll go through this, it shows that sometimes it says that just believing it will be good can bring about good. And some say that you're supposed to be ready for anything that will happen. But we'll see as we go through this. But the idea is that no matter what the philosophy is, the deeper philosophy that Kodesh Baruch Hu is with you through this. And he has the bigger picture and he's handling the situation. Wanna go on? Hashem is the name.
Hashem's name is broad-reaching. Intuitively, we know this as the saying goes. There are no atheists in the foxhole. Tom said, even a bird left the window prays to Hashem for his success. When the chips are down, our eyes instinctively turn to Hashem. Often we begin to pray. Sometimes these prayers are spoken out loud. Often they are not. Instead, our hearts speak silent prayers. What should we hope for? What is it that we expect?
So go on.
If you want to say something.
Okay. Trust in Hashem is not an excuse for indolence. Every responsible effort to obtain what we need must be made.
So this is really important because in here he talks about, later on there's a chapter on Hishtadlus and Bitachon and what it means to balance the two together. That you have to put everything, which we're on, everything possible. You have to do everything, but at the same time you have to know that your Hishtadlus is not bringing out the desired result. There's another purpose for the Hishtadlus, a different purpose, but you have to do it. But so we live as Jews in two different realms. One in the physical realm of doing and action, and one in the spiritual realm of knowing that everything comes from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So we walk a tightrope all the time, you know? Okay. Like riding a bicycle, right? You have to go a little bit to the right to the left. That's how you learn to ride a bicycle. And so you're finally like in the middle. But the truth is you're never really in the middle. Even when you're on a bicycle, you're always like this. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're doing all the time. And it's no easy task at all. But that's what we're, as Jews, meant to do. We have a spiritual component, our soul, and a physical component, our guf. And somehow doing the shtadlus in this world brings our guf and our neshama together when we use the right kavana, the right perspective in doing it. And the shtadlus can do an enormous amount for us. It's not like we're doing it like, okay, I'm doing it because I have to do it. Shtadlus actually develops us as people. Makes us into different people.
In what way?
So what do you think? If you have to do Hishtadlus, how does that help you as a human being?
Well, it makes you not be lazy. It's like, okay, whatever will happen, you know? But you
right.
have to put in the work.
Right. That Hashem wants us to develop our Midah. He wants us to become successful, reason, and organized, non-lazy, highly developed individuals. He gave us bodies and intelligence and kochos to develop, not just to like lay in bed and say, you know, Hashem, davening for dinner that we made on the and it should come down on the table. We have to do that too, and know that even though we get up and slice the carrots and whatever, that really the dinner is going to be that Hashem decided would be there. You know, just like taking a pill, you know, that's from Hashem if it works or not. Same thing, I'm making dinner. It's really from Hashem. It's wrong to say I'm making dinner and dinner is here on the table because I made it. On the other hand, if I don't get up and make dinner, then I'm going to become a lazy, disorganized, you know, I'm never going to learn skills as a human being. Hashem wants us to be, to use our kochos that He gave us. He didn't just give us our kochos to, you know, let them become nothing. Makes us kind or patient or. Right. And makes us relationships. Makes us have relationships. It's everything. Everything that we have to develop in this world comes through the Hashanah in terms of the physical and creation in this world. Everything, even tefillah, we have to use our mouth. We're not supposed to just read, right? We're not supposed to just look at tefillah. We're supposed to actually use our mouth.
And even hear a little bit of the word.
Right. Shema, and stepping back, we're stepping forward. You know, there are put into place physical things that we're supposed to do with our standing up, sitting down, like all these things we're doing in the middle of tefillah. You know, why don't you just sit down and do the whole thing? No. Because I'll put into it all these things. We're supposed to relate to it physically. And like you said, also every mitzvah is actually, every bracha rests on a physical object. You can't make kiddush, right, without wine or bread. You're not lighting candles, you know, and you're making kedusha Shabbos. Why does it have to be on something physical? What's the relationship? Everything. Sukkah, Esrog, you know, lighting candles for Shabbos to bring in Shabbos. Everything is resting on a physical thing. So it's connecting constantly the spiritual to physical to spiritual. And that's what we are as people. We should put our soul into a physical body. So we have to get this physical body to do something in this world.
And the opinion of, like, the more bitachon that you have, the less hashtabis you do. And someone that's doing more hashtabis is because they have spirit, like that. Let's say, for example, right, like we've heard stories of someone, you know, sick, so. Like right there, big gedolim or whatever. So much bitachon that they didn't feel like they had minimal hishtabas, and yet there would be a point. Someone else has to do a lot of hishtabas.
And that's also very, because there's stories of like the gedolim who say to someone, you know, you have to go and go to the top, you know, to the top doctor, the top this, you know, you have to go and put in everything to do it. But each person, we don't know what the tikkunin that person has to go through. Why they have to do this, it doesn't, you know, we don't know. We can't read a person's picture.
Very fine line.
Right. And you don't know, maybe that Shaliah, maybe you have to have a tikkun with that Shaliah from a previous Gilgal. We don't know.
You said more stuff,
you know, less
become,
but
more
become.
Maybe a different kind of stuff. Let's say there's more become.
But I don't know that we're in that level to like be taught, even like dealing with that.
A person has to know whether it's really that level, or whether it's just
a laziness,
and
fear,
lack of responsibility.
Fear, lack of responsibility.
Like, each person knows
each person has to know. And you don't know at what point in your situation how much Shabbos you might have to do. There might be periods of lowering Shabbos, or you don't know, and you don't know what area in your life.
How does each person know for themselves?
Like,
that's
the
right question.
What? And feel it, and you know, self awareness.
But Sukkah is a shtetl. Sukkah is a form of the shtetl.
But even with tefillah, you need Hashem's help, because like at the beginning of Shemona Esrei, they say Hashem's Vatayti Tzachu Pitzchak Yitzchila Tzachu. So even there, you need Hashem's help. You sometimes you think that I'm going to go buy a mezuzah, or I'm going to go buy something ruchani, something for a mitzvah. Then you also ask for Hashem's help.
Like for example, on parnasa, I think if someone like know that the amount of money that you're supposed to have is set to you on Rosh Hashanah, right? So then you're doing your Shabbos and you're working or you're doing whatever you're doing. So it's, at which point you say like, okay, like I teach exercise class. Okay, so like I'll add in another class or a few more classes. People are always asking me on this class, that class. But at which point they say, oh, like, I'll do a few more classes and then I'll have that much more money to make it that much more easier, right? Or let's say it's just too much or overwhelming with the kids, you know, but anyway, this amount of money is set aside, so I'm not going to add those few more classes. So is it just because, okay, I'm waiting, I'll get the money, you know, it will come, or it's like, and
so again,
it's very hard,
it's
a very lot of hard work, exactly, right. That should help you to find that awareness and like balance. Really finding that balance, because it's not easy.
And sometimes you have to know the
you never know exactly
you have to make the mistake to know the answer. It's also part of the process that we go through. Very important to keep in mind. Rav Sadat Cohen often talks about that. Often he says a person has to fall in order to find out what the, you know, where his work really is, or where he needed to make a tikkun, or to make that tikkun he needed to fall. Mistakes are not necessarily bad. They're not necessarily bad. So that's part of the evidence. There's a part of the movement through this process.
Well, I guess they did, because they did add a few more classes, and I was falling apart, I couldn't manage, so I stopped, and then some of the money was, like, pretty much the same.
Right. So then you knew, you got to get in.
But, like, I said, forget it, I see that it's just because I wanted more and more classes, you know, like,
okay. You have to stop. With less money, you have to know exactly how much. Because Hamar Beit, he didn't get more, and the Ma'ayti, he also didn't get. You know, you have to, you know,
So we'll just finish this paragraph. We'll hold on to it. So when we get to the B'tap and Shavuot, we'll get more clarity on what it is. Also, okay. So you want to read this again? This last paragraph.
Trust in Hashem is not an excuse for indolence. Every responsible effort to obtain what we need must be made. In the face of setbacks, we dare not throw up our hands and excuse ourselves from the necessary course of action. Yet a believer recognizes that ultimately all is not in his own hands.
Just read this one last.
A parable best illustrates this point. A farmer plants his seeds in order to reap his crop. On occasion, there is a serious frost, a drought, or a plague, and his crops do not prosper. He sows, but that does not reap. Everything is not in the farmer's hands. Yet, had he not planted, carefully watered, and cared for his crop, he would not have had any possibility of reaping from the harvest. This parable illustrates the basic concept of trust. We do ours knowing that Hashem controls all the variables which will determine the outcome.
Okay. We'll stop at this point. Rav Hashem, continue.
How she copies Miramawan of the neighbors. Her father-in-law is right here. He's still in the next door. He's a gadol. Her father-in-law, he's one of the Rosh Hashivas of the Prophet. And it's, maybe I thought, maybe I'll try and get some copies. And it's a good thing to have them when you talk to them.
Not you saying wrong, like he doesn't by heart, he's kind of like walking by him.
No, me, I'll be saying them and then saying them.
Oh,
but the Chagamish is that he wouldn't look. He used to play games with his nephews to close his eyes. The nephews would be in the streets, they wouldn't see. But they wouldn't see women. But he used to have them. And that keeps walking
through him, like.
Look at him.
My first step
So, start again. I want to ask a question. There were, we did last week the beginning of Introduction to Tefillah, and then some people have to leave. And we did a piece on the Beis HaMikdash, on the parallel, the architecture of the Beis HaMikdash, how the architecture of the parallel Tefillah. Now, there were a lot of women asked me later, they said that it was Chaval, that the women missed it. So I don't know if you want at the end, but those women who left early, obviously, really have to leave early. But I also feel like it's a Chaval that they missed it. It's up to what everybody wants.
It's so beautiful.
It makes such a difference when you're done here. Now you're going to go to Shepherd's Dutch and you can't see him at the other back. Who doesn't have the. I'm just going to point myself. Who doesn't have the piece? Someone has to make extra copies. I can share with you now, but I need to keep this one.
Do you want a copy?
No, I need to keep this original one. I'll keep this one, and somebody else can make copies. Okay. What? Okay. Who didn't hear it? Who did not hear it? I didn't hear it. What?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Do you want me to do it? Do you want me to do it at the end, or do you want me to do it now?
Do it now.
Yeah, I'm still doing introduction, but that doesn't really change anything. The question is, for other people, it might be repetitive and boring.
No, not boring. Didn't hear it. If they're staying till the end.
The people that didn't hear it, are you staying until say 10 to 12?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll go do it at the end then. That's okay. Okay.
What? Is that a problem?
No.
So we can get otherwise.
So there's a question on the one.
Well, can duplicate them and
Do you want to ask us that I was going to have any copies?
I don't know which one she picked, because I don't know which she picked out of here, because there's 10 pages of cooking what we got from, but I guess she picked
it. Well, maybe one thing to mention quickly that was, if you're investing also in the rest of owners and the projection, that the Muslims will come out over and the Muslims will come out with it. There were moments in St. Louis, with the Highland here and everywhere else. Experience when you were trained cooking in science, tremendous dangers, the injury in the world from them.
And we go through it all, we'll send you their copies. Okay, so what I was going to do was start with Dani. But, say he asked a great question last week, and I touched on it. And I wanted to address it a little bit in more detail for Tefillah. So I started doing a lot of research and reading and looking at things, and it led me onto a very longer thing. I don't know if we'll actually get to Nodani today, but that's okay. Before I mention her question, I just want to say that we talked last week about the idea of Leaf Palau, of it being the word lihit palel really comes to mean to clarify to oneself, to judge oneself, to distinguish for oneself. And lihit, as we said, means reflexive, which means to do to oneself. Li is to. Hit is reflexive. And palel really comes to mean distinguish, clarify, judge. So that's what we're doing in tefillah. And there are three parts of tefillah that's brought down. The first part is shevach, praise. I can't say the first. One of the pieces is shevach, which is praise. A second piece is bakasha, request. And the third, hoda'ah, thanks. And all of these are woven into and make up tefillah. That's how we talk to Kodesh Baruch Hu. All the tefillah is made up of three components, and the Shmona Esrei is specifically divided into these three components. But what I want to mention is that Shevach is emphasized in Pesukei Tehillah, and Bakasha we talked about last week, and I want to continue this week now. And Hoda'ah is what we're going to begin the concept of when we start Modeh Ani. Okay, so I want to just go back to Sadie's question when she asked about Bakasha. She said that how much should one ask? When do you let go of asking? You know, what happens when you're tired of asking? What happens when you don't get what you want? Maybe you really shouldn't have what you want. When do you accept that you don't have what you want? And we talked about the importance of asking, the ebb and flow of relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. That there's this process of coming to the Kodesh Baruch Hu and putting all of your kochos into asking, and at some point you accept that that's God's will. And that acceptance can last 2 minutes, 3 days, 3 weeks. Okay, but somehow it's in our human nature to need, to want more. And that can come from a negative place, like, you know, wanting a Mercedes and a sailboat and whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, not so bad, you know, whatever. But, or it can come from places of Kedusha, of wanting children, of wanting to talk to the Kodesh Baruch Hu, of wanting help for someone. It can come from all sorts. But we're made, our human nature is to want, to grow, to be more, to have more. And what that having can come from all different Ruchnius or Gashmius places.
And doesn't it begin with knowing that at some point we know that it's essential, but it begins with knowing that it comes from, and then we go further on? We don't have to do it opposite? That's it.
What do you think?
What I think is that what I know, according to what I've learned, I'm not saying that my heart's always, my emotions are always going there, that I know, even this terrible thing that might be happening now, I know that it's good and I know that it's not going to work. And that's how our approach has to begin from the beginning. We have to, we're supposed to. We don't, emotionally, I can't say that I'm, you know,
I don't know which comes first. Because as human beings, we're not made with the knowledge that a Kaddish Baruch Hu, that it's his will. Right? We come into the world as children that have to be taught. Physically, I mean, there's an intuitive tintalayin in each of us, but that's something that has to be developed. It doesn't come automatically. On the other hand, we work back and forth. For example, Hashem made it so that you're hungry 3 times a day, right? Right? All day. 7 times a day. That hunger comes, yeah. In this awareness of a Kaddish Baruch Hu brings you the food, you know, then you can channel any desire towards a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Then sometimes you have the knowledge that this is the will of Hashem, and then you channel your bakasha towards that.
What I'm trying to say, isn't it a fact?
It's a fact, but not that we're aware of it.
Uh-huh.
That's
so
the trick.
I'm saying, I know, meaning, I guess it's the conflict between the sechel and the heart. I guess we're saying the same thing, but it's just it's just I'm pretending perhaps to, because I don't feel like that. And the fact that I'm now with pains in my shoulders and folks, and of course my whole being doesn't know that, I'm not accepting, but it's a fleeting thing, but it's something that, but it is a fact that I've called it for love, and this is Hashem's will.
It is a fact. It doesn't mean that.
You're saying that knowing. Meaning integrating it,
internalizing
it.
Right.
Is it
our goal? And you may not, and people, are all different levels of knowing. Right? There's no, knowing has all different levels. You know, you can know about, in one area of your life, you're very clear, this is Coach Barnes's will. In another area of your life, it's not so clear. It depends on a person's abode in this world and what their sequence is in this world. In other areas, you can be so totally clear, you know, there's not an ounce of a, you know, nothing. You totally see a Kaddish Baruch Hu in this picture. In other pictures, it's very confusing. You know, what's my role? What's my vote? Where do I, you know, where do I have to put in my effort? Right? You know, what's my role in this situation? What's the right thing to do? Like Gedolim on a very, very high level of making decisions. Very high level, very fine level. And that's where we go to them for help, for guidance, because we may not know what Hashem's will is in this situation. We go to them because their perspective is from very high up above, and they may, their understanding of that situation is on such a level that's not as clear to them. Mm-hmm. But on their level, what they're dealing with in terms of their decision making, et cetera, clarity, they're on a different level, and they're going through their own, you know, what's the will of the Kodesh Baruch in this situation? You know,
That's the whole shadow, whether you can summon this call, because if you're in a situation and Hashem puts you in that situation, it's for your good, for what right
okay.
You have to
stop. This is what we're going to talk. This is what I wanted to do the class.
But maybe you shouldn't be done.
With one.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you say. Maybe I shouldn't stop.
Yeah, you
have to stop. So let me go through what the...
Well, what's right to have?
What are...
What are you doing? You know?
Well, let me go through our answer and tell you why. What the answer to that is and why. Okay, B'zat Hashem. Okay, so one thing we have to be very clear that we talked about last week is that the Bakasha, the Shevach, or the Hada'ah, in this case we're dealing with Bakasha, request, is really only a means. It's not the goal. Very clear, we have to be very clear that Bakasha, request, desire, need, is a means. It's not the goal. The goal is not to get what we want. Okay? The fulfillment of our request, the fulfillment of our desire, the fulfillment of our need is not the purpose of our tefillah. Let's be very clear. We'll go through and explain this. Our need can be met, right, by a Kaddish Baruch Hu very easily. No problem for him. Okay? And then, after that, a new need will come. That's the way we're made. Okay, we're made with needs. And it could be a spiritual or physical or intellectual, emotional need. We're going to go from need to need. You know, you finally get married. Okay, then you start davening for children. Then you start davening that they should have, you know, should turn out right. Then you never finish. Right? You never finish. You know, then they have to get married. Then they have to have children. Then they have to have pranasa. I have to have pranasa. I have to have good health. I have to this and that. Whatever. We're never done with our needs. We have to eat 3 times, 7 times a day, whatever. We don't stop. Hashem didn't make us so that we need to eat once a day, or even once a week. Okay? Hashem constantly made us to have needs. You know? It's nice. We have a new dress for Rosh Hashanah, and what happens to Pesach? I want another one. You know? Okay, whatever. It's a constant, and it's a mitzvah to have a new dress for a chagim. It's not like we're not supposed to have these needs. Hashem made us with these things, both physical and spiritual and intellectual. But the never-ending series of needs in our life. So why? Why did Hashem do this stuff? It'd be easier just to create it without me. It's a very spiritual set of things. The ultimate purpose of Bakasha, of coming to Kodesh Baruch Hu, the ultimate purpose of tefillah is to come to Him, to come close to Him. That's why He made us with these needs. Any lack, sorrow, struggle, need, desire, which is missing, can be as much of a gift, if not more, than what we have actually been given. The things that we have in our life are gifts. Things that we lack in our life are also gifts. The bracha, after you eat shahakwa, other foods, and mamazona, when we say bracha tashem, borei nifashem rabo, the chesronon, al kol ma shebarasa, lechayot ha-nefesh kochai barach, chel ha-olamim. In that bracha, it says, "Borei nifashos rabos v'chesronon." Why that word? Any word that Chazal put into a bracha has to have deep meaning. Now, there are many, many meanings why the four tefillin are. I just want to say one. This is a bracha of gratitude, right? A thanks for what one has eaten. And yet we talk about Borei Nefashos Rabbeinu B'Chesronon. The lack, Hashem blesses with its lack. It's a bracha to have lack, something lacking. And this lacking makes the whole world go round. Okay? Everything, you know, the tree needs to be watered. It has a lack, right? The fruit, everything has, you know, man then comes to eat the fruit. Every man doesn't have fruit growing inside him. He has to go to the tree. Every person, everything has its lack, which makes A, interconnections between people, as Bar says, and it makes interconnection with the Kaddish Baruch Hu because of this lack. The lack of each thing is very chashuv, very important. Something that is cut there, missing, creates attachment, necessitates connection. A person's sick, they need help from someone else. That creates a connection between people. You know, each dachim, you have to create connection between people. You know, a child needs ready. This is connection. Every single thing in this world that has a lack, it creates, forces connection. And the ultimate connection is between man and a Kaddish Baruch Hu, woman and a Kaddish Baruch Hu, child and a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Every single lack is a gift to us. And it's between man and objects, a tree, grass, his home, clothes, shelter, man and another man and a Kaddish Baruch Hu. And what was considered the worst curse in the world? The worst curse in the world when Adam and Chava were in Gan Eden, and the Nachash, the snake, the serpent, enticed Chava to eat from the prohibited fruit of the Eitz Hadas, the tree of knowledge. She then gave this forbidden fruit to Adam. And Hashem punishes each one in this group, Adam, Chava, and the Nachash. But the Nachash, it says, is cursed the worst. He was cursed in that his food will be the dust of the earth. It says in Bereishis, V'afar tachal kol yimei chayecha, dust you'll eat all the days of your life. Afar min ha'aretz. In other words, I mean, there's discussion about what that means. He doesn't really eat afar, but because everything tastes him like dust, he can get his food from the ground. He will never have to worry about his food. It will be available at all times and all places. Now you would think, this is a great bracha. This is a blessing, not a curse, to always have whatever you all food all the time. Can you imagine? It's great. It says the opposite. Afar is infinite everywhere. Hashem is telling Nachash, no matter what, where you are, under what situation, you'll have plenty to eat. The reason that this is a curse is that with such unlimited resources, he will never have to turn to Hashem for food. He doesn't have to ever talk to Hashem. The minute he has a desire, it's taken care of. Hashem basically terminated most of his relationship to the snake, to the Nachash. It's a terminated relationship on most levels. Okay? This idea of total self-sufficiency, total independence, is overabundance, no lacking, no concern, is actually a curse. Because your relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu becomes limited, and your involvement with him becomes minimal. So when needs are met, when our needs aren't met, when there is stuff there missing, it's a gift of relationship, a gift either between people, a gift between us and the things that we have in the world, a gift between us and the Kaddish Baruch Hu. The Talmud says that Hashem set up our lives so that we must turn to him three times a day to get what we need. This is in the form of tefillah. We have to ask him constantly for food, health, shelter, knowledge, mental capabilities, emotional needs, spiritual needs. All these needs motivate us to be close to him. So, Rabbi Kirzner says, Rabbi Yitzchak Kirzner, and it's actually, I'll go on to say, Rav Shmuel Wasserman repeats this, and in the name of many, many Gedolim, they say there are two purposes to these needs that lead us to pray. There are two reasons why we have these needs. One, as we said, is a vehicle to create and develop a relationship with Hashem. to move from the abstract concept of the Kaddish Baruch Hu. Like you were saying, we all know it's the will of Hashem. Knowing something is the will of Hashem, knowing that something is the will of the Kaddish Baruch Hu, is different than actually living it. We can be in a mental state, oh, Hashem runs the world, he's the creator, he made everything. We can live with that kind of mental knowledge, or think in that type of way, but live in a different way, right? Our actual actions can actually be different. These needs force us into a more real, a living, real relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. Move from abstract to real. Okay? That's what Hashem's trying to do. He didn't just make it, you know, you read Torah and then you can constantly think how this represents the world. He also made us physically want things, need things, and then come to Him with our desires. He made us that way. It's not like a half in that way or, you know, a nice extra here. It's built into the world because the Kaddish Baruch Hu wants us to have a relationship with Him. The second reason is that, which is related to the first, and we talked about Yitzhalah, it transforms ourselves into more highly developed people. In other words, we have to figure out who we are, what we want, where we're going, what our relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu is, as we said before, to clarify our purpose in this world. Because when we have a need, we have to figure out, do we really want this thing? Do we think something that we really need or kind of need? Or maybe really we don't need it. Or maybe, what's the purpose of needing it? What do we do when we get it? How are we going to use it? And not only that, but because we have a need, we have to do both. Pray for it and work to get it. And then, as like Deborah was saying, and we were saying that there, it builds us into human beings. And we have to work to make a need into reality. It makes us out of laziness. It makes us into organized people. It makes us develop our memory. It makes us develop all the process that Kaddish Baruch Hu put into us. I mean, we learn to write because we have a need. You know, can you imagine it's not writing? And there are people that can't write. And, you know, everything that we do, you know, the fact that I can read time, it's the one?
No.
The fact that you can read the clock, it develops because of a need. It develops because of a human being. And you can use your clock to do things on time, to use it for spiritual purposes, a communion on time, whatever it is. Change it, and hopefully grow. They're a very different situation than someone who has children right away. Their appreciation of their children is different. We just have a friend who, after 8 years of marriage, they just had triplet boys. We also have a friend, her daughter, who's not, got married at 19, within the first year, also of marriage, she's not 20 yet, or she just turned 20, she also had triplets. Okay, now her, the girl who obviously probably didn't die for children yet, she just got married, right? Her relationship to these children is very different than the person who waited 8 years for these children. Now, that's in the Kaddish Baruch Hu's textbook, what was the behind each person's matana children. But the intensity and perception that grows and develops in a very deep inner place through a person's tefillah over and over and over again changes the relationship to that object. That's why Kaddish Baruch Hu says that Hashem wants to feel it, the tefillahs of the righteous. Right? When Avram and Sarah and all of us as Enoch and Avram did not have children, their tefillahs, year after year after year, deepened their connection and their reason for wanting those children. And us, that we have to come out of that, we have to come out of their spiritual gene. So their kavanas and having children have been entirely different than a typical kavana of having a child. It has to be from a very high spiritual place. What's the purpose of a child in this world? What is the purpose of a neshama coming down to this world? What is the purpose of Adar and Sarah having a child? Of Rivka and Yitzchak having a child? What's the purpose? Very different than just having a child. And Hashem needed their development. He didn't give them a child immediately. But he chose not to because he wanted them to develop internally. Now, it's not easy. It's hard work, repetitive, tiring. Sometimes it's easier just to say,
maybe Hashem doesn't want it right now. Hashem's a daven and give it. Sometimes it's like really, we're thinking maybe Hashem doesn't really want it. It's really effort. It's a vote to keep davening for something that doesn't happen. But it says, and say he mentioned this, Kaveh Hashem, Chazakti Metzabacha B'Kaveh El Hashem. Why does it say? It says Kaveh El Hashem, hope to Hashem. Chazak, hope strongly. Yeah, Metzabacha Hashem will strengthen your heart. But then it says again, Kaveh El Hashem. Because it's not easy to hope when you don't get an answer. It's not easy to keep on. It's easy to think, well, you know, maybe it just won't be. And I can handle that. Because keeping on hoping and not getting is a hard, hard task. It's a very hard struggle. Maybe it's easier to know, you know, I just won't have this, and I'll make my life this way without it. Then I won't have this constant yearning, whatever. You know, just put it on the side, and it's easier. But it doesn't say that. It says, Kaveh Hashem one more time at the end of the pasuk. Keep on hoping. Don't give up that hope. Because in that hope, and in that driving and yearning changes you. It does something to you. The stopping is your personal loss, not Hashem's loss. It's your personal loss in getting deeper within yourself and getting deeper to know what the purpose of that thing is that you want and getting deeper to know what the purpose of it is in this world, what the purpose of it is for a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's a personal loss. You're losing for yourself something in there. Something deep. A deeper connection to that thing. A deeper connection to even to hope. To the concept of hope. To the idea that Kadosh Baruch Hu can do anything. There are a million things that you're losing out on. And one of the deeper things, if you're looking at Tefillah, is you're losing the you're losing the relationship one with the Kadosh Baruch Hu and the deepening of your understanding of what that thing can do for you or what that thing's purpose is in the world. Now you might determine that thing doesn't have a purpose anymore. That's a decision, but that comes through enormous introspection, self awareness. Okay. And look at Sarah Maynard. We'll learn it. Keep in here in Sefer Bitachon, the Sefer Bitachon, that talks about that Sarah Imenu was barren. She no longer could possibly nurse. She was mamish barren, and she never stopped hoping and praying for a child. Now, right, it says that she didn't have a womb. And it says in here that she was credited for every ounce of the mitzvah of Bitachon, for every moment that she hoped for a child. Okay? It told her to rise above the physical world into a state of purely seeing that children come from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now, that's our because we have it in us as well. I don't you have to ask a child. That would be asking her. Right. You have to ask. That's a child that I can't answer you. I'm just giving you a...
That people could have a child without a womb. There have been cases of children, people having children without womb.
No, I think I'm not sure, but I want to ask this question. So you can daven for nate, you can't be soma on the nate. It's two different things. Okay? It could be, a person says, you know, if the sword has its throat, you can daven for nate, and that's a nate. He's, you know, being guillotined, then, you know, that's going to take an ace to get him out of that situation. So, So remember, there are two parts to this idea of never letting go of fila for a bakasha. You achieve a closer moment, more intimate, more real relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu, and you develop what your own selfhood. You develop your own inner being, inner direction, clarity. And this is the path of the imahos and the avos through the lack of children. Now, I have to remember from last week, it's not a contingency plan. And Rav Simcha Wasserman, I read, okay, talks about this in a great deal. It's not an idol. And he talks about exactly what it's not an idol. It's not our idol. You know, it's not our idol, like we said last week. It's not a robot. You don't push a button, and Hashem will answer you. Okay? That's not the relationship. It's not a contingency plan. In other words, if Hashem determines to answer you, it doesn't determine to answer you. It's not like I'm going to stop davening or, you know, we went through a long length lesson, so I'm not going to detail now, but, you know, we're so used to our computers and our machines and our, you know, ballpoint pens that the minute you do it, you turn it on, push the button, it's going to work. Right? And so we think Hashem is going to work. It's not a relationship. And I'll stay in the relationship if it works, and I'll get out. Like, I'm going to throw away the, you know, people throw away their everything now. Everything's like a throwaway. You know?
But that's throwing away. Hashem always answers. It could be the not the answer that you want.
So we went to that last week.
Yeah.
We're not going to go to that.
Throw away contact lenses.
We are throw away everything. We don't like it, we throw it away. Doesn't work, we'll buy a new one. An idol is the same thing. The idol is like, I made the idol, and then you cup up the tuma, but the idol delivers certain magic, if you will, quote unquote, powers in this world. So from that, which I put into the idol, so I do for the idol, idol does for me. It's not God. It's not a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's what a lot of people think Tefillah is. It's complicated. But, the idea is that when you change and develop yourself, your tefillah, for your efforts in this world, for your tzaddik, for your mitzvah, then things can change from above. It's not that we're not here to change God, okay? God's not going to change because we tell him to. You know, he's doing what's best for us and for the whole world. For the Tikkun Olam. He's not going to change that we're telling him to. It's not like that. On the other hand, when we're asking him for something, it somehow changes us, which opens us up to bracha from above. So it's for us to change. It's not like getting Hashem to change. This last forces us to do something about it, to ask for us if we really want it and why. And then we have a better chance of using it for higher spiritual purposes. And that's the change. Hashem maybe not want to give it to us if we're going to use it for not good purposes, or we're not going to appreciate it, or whatever reason he has in his Heshvan, which are a million. And it could be for a multitude of reasons all at one time. Hashem is infinite. He can take care of everything all at once. But it's interesting that Rashi brings down in Bereishit, in Parashat Pasuk Hay, it says all the trees of the field were not yet on the earth. And then it says the herbs of the field had not yet sprouted. That they hadn't yet come out. So that Hashem made all the world, but the fields and the trees didn't have any growth. Everything was under the ground, waiting for potential. Until Adam was made, and then he prayed for it, and it rained, and it brought all the herb and foliage into reality, into existence. Now, how did Adam know that that's the way the world is supposed to look? Okay? That's one question. And the question is, how did he know to pray for rain, bring rain to make it grow? Yet somehow, others had a concept of more in the world. But there had to be more. He had a need or a desire or understanding that there had to be more in the world. And it was an innate piece of him that knew, saw a bigger picture, and he davened that he knew that there should be moisture or whatever that should come and bring out from under, from wherever, bring it out into the world. Rav Ashi in Gemara says that Rav Ashi, tribute to Rav Ashi, that Hashem desires the tzibos of the righteous, of the tzaddiki. It's on this that Rav Ashi talks about it. He says that to make the earth fertile, which is bringing all the world into potential. Without the earth fertile, we don't have anything. To bring potential to reality depends on man. It not just depends on a Kaddish Baruch Hu. He'll only bring this potential into reality depending on man, his tefillah, and his active will. And there's a Rav Menachem Recanati, I don't know if you ever heard of him, he lived about 700 years ago in Italy, and he wrote, he was a Rishon, and he wrote a parish on Torah, a parish on Tefillah. And he says that he said that man plays a key role in developing creation. That Yeshua don't come from this mystery of like pain in the world. It doesn't come from like a mystery name. He says that man can arouse rachamim and hashgacha and pain in the world by his deeds and by his prayers. And he thinks that life, Hashem is waiting for our tefillos, waiting for our deeds, for us to recognize that we're collaborators, partners in creation. That when we recognize Hashem is the source of our life, and through this partnership, Hashem's bracha can come down into the world. Can you close that?
What did you say?
There's two questions. One is, he's saying one is an innate understanding that we miss something, or an innate understanding that we miss something that, and then and that missing comes from a Kaddish Baruch Hu. That's what I said. I know atheists in the foxhole. When it comes right down to the bottom line, when you're in a real tough situation, that's when the neshama peeks out and says,
Hashem
help. Every person has a neshama. Every tree is no herbage, no grass, nothing. He must innately. It says that he innately knew, intuitively knew that there must be more.
And that
led him to
doing
appeal to Kaddish Baruch Hu.
And his firstborn intelligence.
So the idea, though, from this that Rav Nachum Frikanati says is that we are partners in creation. That Hashem has brought us to bestow, but we have to pull it down. We have to be open, recipient, vessels for this bracha. And the two ways of this bracha are our tefillos and our mitzvahs, but we're collaborators. Now, we're not here to change God. That's not the idea. Hashem has bracha waiting for us. The bracha may be, like you said, a yes or a no. That's another area. But through tefillos and shavuos, we change. We change. And then we bond with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, and once we change, we then merit new bracha in the world. Until Adam could actually daven for this bracha of rain, it couldn't come down. It was something that changed in him by his awareness and by his tefillah, that then changed the world in such a way that a Kaddish Baruch Hu could bring down, or bring from the ground, this
bring about
the herbage, the foliage, the bracha, the fruits, the everything. Now, Hashem's tefillah brings about this kind of green, the earth, etc. It was a change. Now, we don't realize how much our tefillah actually changes the world. And even though we don't see it externally, we don't necessarily know what our tefillah is doing in the world. It could have an effect for someone else in the world. Sometimes it has a direct effect on us, you see it. Sometimes it has an effect a few hundred years later. We have no idea. But we are changing both the external world, but more deeply, we're changing our internal world. The source of our real growth and change inside, which then allows or influences changes in the world. So any Jew has effect on the world. So any internal work that we do changes the external world. Like we said, when we're discussing an external, we change the world through her tefillos and through her Mishdalos and what she did. But that's within us. And tefillah brings this spiritual component down into the physical world, which then almost creates a spiritual boomerang back up to the heavens, and then creates another boomerang back down into the world. It's this constant going back and forth, which is actually what we're supposed to be doing. We are spiritual and physical beings that work with both in both realms. We keep down here and in heaven. And Hashem is living up and down constantly. But he's waiting for us. You know, we're just like, he can't like force it into us. He tries. He definitely gives us enough practice to try to get us there, but he can't force our free will. We still have to have free will. Yeah. So the Chachamim say that no tefillah, none, is ever wasted. None goes to waste, whatever capacity. And I just want to quote something from the Manchester Rosh Yeshiva Reb Segal. He says that Avodas Halev, can you read it? Service of the heart, describes prayer as something which by definition requires feeling and concentration, not mere lip service. The term has another connotation as well. Tefillah, when approached properly, is a service which refines the heart, as it draws the supplicant closer to his creator and deepens his understanding of the purpose of life. Right there are the two reasons for tefillah, the two real purposes of tefillah, not to get what we need, but one, to make a relationship, a bonding with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and the second, to refine the person, to deepen his perception of what life is really for. The Rosh Yeshiva went on to say that the power of prayer is to never give up in any situation. That's the real prayer. And it says, Matzich Keren Yeshua, when we talk about it in the Shemona Esrei, the cause of salvation to flourish, to sprout. It's a soma, a plant. At the beginning, the seed is totally concealed underground. We can't see at all that there's anything really there. And eventually, the seed sprouts, and somehow that little seed manages to poke through this heavy, heavy ground, rock, whatever, and grows. And then it's apparent that the seed, with all the potential, was really there under the ground. But there must have been something there to begin with for some time. But we didn't know it. We couldn't see it. And that's what we're doing in our tefillah, in the situation that every time we're like davening for something, we're making that little plant decompose and then recompose and then push up until it blossoms. But even if the situation looks bleak, hopeless, Rosh Hashiva says that the seeds of salvation may already be there, you just don't see it yet. But if you're nourishing and you're kavanah and you're searching and you're real self introspection and desire to approach the Kodesh Baruch Hu, that may be nurturing and blossoming that salvation for you, for anybody, family members, for Chai Israel, for the world, and it's for you to give us the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And it says the Rosh Hashanah never stops doubting the Chai Israel. Under any situation, he used to go name by name by name. And sometimes he said that once a family came to him, and he asked for every name of every member of the family and what their situation was. He doubted for each one, and it said that the next day, or a few days later, they brought one of the sons of this family, the large family, they brought one of the sons to the Rosh Hashiva for a special bracha. And he said, oh, you're so-and-so. You're this son. He was right. Because that's how much he focused on each person and this and tefillah for each individual client. And we just don't know what our tefillahs do in the world. We're dying for ourselves, someone we know, we don't know, that, you know, that we're changing ourselves and we're changing the world through this tefillah.
Basically, like, what they were both saying, the whole conflict of, like, you know, knowing that it's good for us if we're lacking something, so we daven or not. So basically, at that, this is what you're saying about the epic. For that day, that moment that you're lacking it, and that it's, you know, quote unquote, really not good, you want something else. So for that moment, that is what's best for you. And
right. So that's
but yes, we still for sure have to dive into better the situation, because maybe we will get that bettering, and through that we'll be able to serve them better. But maybe we won't. But even if we don't, we bettered our situation by developing ourselves better and by
It's a tricky thing, but it's the idea that right now, at this moment, this is what a person wants for me. But it doesn't mean that I should stop asking for it. It means that in the next minute, it could change.
Right.
You know, that term, time, is irrelevant to Kaddish Baruch Hu. We see things in time, which we're supposed to. At this moment, Kaddish Baruch Hu said, this is your master. Accept at this moment. But a moment changed. Right? I can doubt that for whatever reason, I should be different, or the world should be different, or the situation, or whatever it is, so that the next moment should be different.
So we have a chiyuv to accept the situation how it is now for the moment, but we also have a chiyuv to daven that it gets better.
Mm-hmm. And that moment is a moment. So in other words, you're in the moment, but that moment changes in the moment.
In a second, right?
Right, less than a second.
Less than
I heard that Eitzel have to get the tefillah to be accepted, because the situation you're in is the best situation for you. So you're supposed to accept that. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu has tzar, the Shechina has tzar, and everybody who has tzar. So if you say, okay, I accept, it's fine for me, you know, this is, I know this is a bit for me, but you're having tzar, the Shechina is having tzar, so please help me out because of the tzar of the Shechina. It was Rav Mutzafi brought this, and the shame of Rav Chaim of Elojan. No, Hashem is having tzar, so change it because you're having tzar.
Well,
I don't
mean tzar, but you understand what you're saying, something is that makes this into a real relationship. If you feel at a very high level tzar, the Kaddish Baruch Hu, you're in a relationship with Hashem, you're feeling his tzar. It's not like some, that's not like, you know, God's an idol or a machine or a robot. Hashem, a hobby, he's not a living human being, but it's related to Kaddish Baruch Hu in a real way. That he has tzar, that it's painful, that he's watching his getting in pain. That's like, it's going into a real relationship, which is the ultimate place that Hashem wants us to have.
Right.
So it's not like a trick. You know what I mean? Like a trick. If I have feel ten stars, I'm going to get answered. We have to get rid of some tricks. It's like being in a relationship.
It's positive also that when Hashem wants to give us Shem Shabbat, he's waiting for us to receive us. So when we do that, we're enabling Hashem to be able to give us. So that's like a knockout that we give Hashem. He just wants to give us Shabbat. So that's also, you know, like an emotional kind of.
That's a very emotionally healthy way to look at it.
That's what Chabad
is saying.
Giving
that
enabling to do
it. Good. What I want to do real quick, because I think
it's
time.
It's time to following you from, you know, the text on that when you get tired of doubting you, you get tired of thinking about it. It's such a painful thing when you're doubting so painfully, you're putting the pain and expressing it, but then you just kind of put down with it. You know what I'm saying? So how now can I, and then you kind of dropped it. It's like on the side, it's being mentioned here and there, you know, in the low flame, but it's not what it was. And instead, even I might be, okay, of course I'm talking about something I'm experiencing, I might be doing it the same thing about someone else with that problem, and just leaving my thing aside, because it's just, I guess, yeah, not only the same thing, but I'm exhausted.
Draining.
So now, what should I do in order to rejuvenate myself again to get back to doubting to that with all my heart?
Yeah, I heard an eighth one for this, but there are different things that are going on, like when doubt's been for a long time, it doesn't happen, and then so sometimes you need to just leave it for a little while. Sometimes you really need that your space. You know, sometimes you need to leave it and let it be. You know, let it just, you know, be on the side. You just need a break from something. And then there are different ways, I guess, to like emotionally look into what's going on. You know, what I really want it for, what's it for, what's the purpose. Like, try to connect to it maybe in a different path than the way you've been looking at it. It might have a different, so I might want you to look at it from a different perspective. Maybe it has to be like a, it's a be more positive perspective. It could be from a more, you know, just a different angle of what it is and what it means in your life. I don't know if I'm asking specifically, but you know, I don't have a specific thing. But
can it be translated into the whole image can be translated in focus, instead of focusing on the dominating, focusing on the practicing what I can do to the person. That's actually what happens. Now that you brought this up, I'm thinking what happened actually is that my focus switched now.
So that's exactly what happened to the answer. Hashem said, stop stopping, get in there. You know? Hashem said, it's not time, you have to just go.
You be practical.
Yeah, sometimes it's a different way of working that kind of spark on one. And sometimes by like, then doing the Hishtalot, it brings you back to the yearning of it. You know? Sometimes that works that way also. You have to get re-involved in it a different way. And sometimes it's like emotional, psychological things that you have to work through with the item, with the thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might hit a place where there might be a psychological reason why you're not into it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you have to like, that's part of our growth. We have to figure it out. We need to figure out what's really going on behind the scenes of our mind. I mean, my friend, she was done to get married for a long time, and suddenly she thought, you know, what do I need this for? I have a good life, I have a good community, I just said, what do I need a husband that's gonna, you know, cause me all these problems, blah, 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 blah. She went through like 3 or 4 months like that. She stopped dating, and she said to herself, you know, and she realized that she had to work through, she needed to come to that acknowledgement, there was a psychological place in her, of just feeling like the whole marriage thing is a pain in the neck, and she had to like, work through it. But she'd been diving to get married, and then she realized, you know, maybe I don't really want this thing. And then she had to work through this idea of what marriage really is, what the purpose is, da da da. And then her desire for it started to build again. But that had risen to the surface. She had to deal with it. So it was good, it was growth, it was positive for her.
It's all that
time
they've done, and you just need to
And he knows what needs to pull out and come out of us. So should I do this based on Mason?
One is next week is Lachba Omer on Tuesday, and we wanted to know if there would be room coming or if it's not a good morning. But that's a consensus? Is there people who could come? Next week is like the Omer Tuesday. So we didn't know, Chava can teach, but we didn't know if women could come.
Could you do anything?
Be careful. I'd like to keep teaching. I know it's like the Omer, but it's really a code, right? So,
really what?
A code.
A phone.
And we're talking with the Ani. I could start earlier, so people could, you know, leave early. Mm-hmm. And we could just not do the...
Could we do it on Wednesday?
Could we do Wednesday?
What about
Shani? For me, Shani, Monday I can't do. What Wednesday I'm going to do. And Thursday I could do. Wednesday. Is Wednesday?
Is that work for most women?
Is there anybody who can?
What? I mean,
Who can do Wednesday? Okay, so I can do Thursday. And you can do Thursday.
Wednesday. Thursday's harder probably than Wednesday. How many people can come Wednesday again?
Okay,
How many people on Thursday could come? It's hard.
So we'll do Wednesday, and then we'll have the tape.
The other thing I just wanted to make a quick announcement.
I can't stay more than 5 more minutes.
Oh, okay, so I'll get after you.
That's
more important.
So it's going to be Wednesday, right? I'm sorry, but I have to do this really quickly. We went through in the class last week the whole idea of the disparity habit. But the idea of the tefillah is linked to the Beit HaMikdash, to Har HaBayit. And I'm not going to go into details. You can listen to the tape from last time what that meant. But all the tefillahs go towards the Beit HaMikdash and then up to Shemayim. So what Rav Schwab did an incredible, beautiful piece on the order of the tefillahs and how it parallels the architecture of the Beit HaMikdash. And our movement through all the tefillah, the order of the tefillah parallels the architecture of the Beit HaMikdash, and our movement as a club, okay, individually we all have limitations within the Beit HaMikdash, but our movement through the Beit HaMikdash all the way to the Kodesh Kodashim is the order in which we are actually coming closer to Kodesh Baruch Hu through our tefillah. And the idea of karban, and the word karban really means come closer to Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's what the karban is. But we don't have the karban us now, but we have the idea or the plan is of the Beit HaMikdash. And everybody can look as we go through this. So the first thing that we come to, if you see the big courtyard on the left, is the Ezra's Nashim. Okay, do you have something to look on to? Okay, everybody should look on with somebody. Okay. So I need to look on with me. So the first courtyard is Ezra's Nashim. Ezra's Nashim was not the Ezra's Nashim like, in a show where there weren't men there. There were sections, if you see, for the Nashim on the side. The top and bottom. Do you have something to look at? Can you look at with her? Do you have?
I don't have mine, but I remember what you said. That's fine. It's good to
hear. We can look together and we'll look here. I just want this one back. This was the original one that I have, okay? If you see, the Ezra's Nashim was a huge courtyard. In this courtyard is was the gathering place, kind of a general assembly place for everyone. That's where the Simchas Beis HaShoeva used to be. It's where the place where the king would read, the Melech would read the Torah during Hakel. Okay, that's like, and there were other activities that went on. And there were other sections for the women, but it was called the Ezra's Nashim because it was up to where the women could come to, but it was a really big gathering place. Now, in the pre-dawn hours, before the main doors of the rest of the Beit HaMikdash would open, where the Karbanos actually took place, which only could happen after daybreak. So in the pre-dawn hours, this is where people would say Tehillim, learn Torah, have private tefillos,
in the early morning before the karbana. And a lot of these bodhidus were done, as you know.
Before all of the shakun?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And this, you know that it used to be that people would meditate an hour before tefillah, an hour after tefillah. All this took place in this Ezra's Nashim. This corresponds today to what we say beforehand. The Adon Olam, Matovu, Birkas Netilas Yadayim, Asher Yatzar, Elokai Neshama. Okay, that's the when you think of, when you're doing these tefillos, we're actually in the Ezra's Nashim. Now, it says here, if you look where the round steps are, it says, Chamesh Esrei Ma'alot. There are 15 steps there. Those are the 15 steps from the courtyard, the Ezra's Nashim, up to the court of the court of the Ezra's Yisrael. If you see, right after the steps is the Ezra's Yisrael. That's the next courtyard. Now these 15 steps correspond to the 15 Birkos Hashachar. Now, I know that usually we say today Birkos HaTorah first, but it didn't used to be that way. It used to be that when a person woke up, they would say that Birkos HaShachar according, you know, like, it's standing up, putting on your clothes, everything related to waking up, opening your eyes, everything was related more towards the getting up, and each bracha related to that awareness of that moment. But over time, it was instituted that it was instituted to have the after Birkas HaTorah because people would go to shul and learn Torah early in the morning. So the original order relates to exactly this based on Mitzvah was. Today's order is a little bit different because there were changes by Chazal, which I went into much more in the tape from last week in terms of halacha, but just to give you an idea. So anyway, we have the 15th Birkas HaShachar relate to these 15 steps. Every step up was really a step in the bracha, moving up and up and up towards towards Ezra's Israel. Now the interesting thing is that at the end of the Birkas HaShachar we say Gomel Chasadim Tovim La'amo Yisrael, right? We would enter the Ezra's Yisrael on that bracha. Gomel Chasadim Tovim La'amo Yisrael. Because at this point, this is now, from the Ezra's Nashim to the Ezra's Yisrael, no non-Jews could go to the Ezra's Yisrael. Okay? Only non-Jews could be in the Ezra's Nashim. Remember, they bring karbanos, and they could come in up to that point. But that's the end of the point. That was designed only for Bnei Yisrael. And you're entering a private relationship of Klal Yisrael to Hashem. If you listen to the tape, you'll hear more detail about it, etc., etc. Then we have, if you see here, it says Ezra's Kohanim. You see some steps, and it says Hadukham. You see like a line. After Ezra's Kohanim, you see lines? Mm-hmm. Okay. So Ezra's Kohanim was the platform on which the Kohanim left the Jewish people. Now this is equivalent to this is a three-part bracha, right? It's equivalent considered to Birkas HaTorah, the relationship between Kohanim and Birkas HaTorah, which also consists of three parts. And this is a threefold blessing over the Torah, and then we say three sections from the Torah: Chumash, Mikra, Mishnah, and Gemara. Okay, three parts: Chumash, Mishnah, and Gemara. And that's the idea of the three parts. Then we continue with the Mizbeach. If you see next, we have the Mizbeach. You see the big Mizbeach in the middle? Okay, so that Mizbeach is where Parshas HaTami was given. And that's, at this point in the Seder Tefillah, is the Karbana. Okay, that's when we say Karbana. Then we have what's called Bein HaUlam V'LeMizbeach. Between the Mizbeach and the Ulam. The Ulam, you see that before you get to the Kodesh and the Kedoshim, you see like a rectangular building, rectangular piece, and it says right in the middle, Ulam. Between the Mizbeach and the Ulam, it's called Bein HaUlam LeMizbeach. And there are 12, you can't really see the steps, but it says there, if you look carefully, it says 12 Yudzeh Ma'alot HaUlam. You can't see the steps didn't come out so clearly, but there are 12 steps leading up to the Ulam, and then there's the floor. of the Ulam. So make 13. This corresponds to the 13 rules. If you ever read the Karbanos, at the end of Karbanos, before you start Pesukei Dezimra, if you've ever read there, it says Rabbi Yishmael Omer.